Good afternoon. I call this meeting of the Human Services Policy Committee to order. Members, please take your seats. We don't have a quorum present at this point, but we will go ahead and get started with things. And then once we have quorum, we will move back to acting on the minutes and dealing with the first bill we have today. We will start with House File 1683, which is Representative Bierman bill. Because we don't have quorum, I will not be able to move it at this point. I do know that you have a DE3 amendment. So what we can do is we could go ahead and have you explain the DE3 amendment, and we can start discussions along those lines. And I do understand that we have some presenters. So if you'd like to go ahead and start, Representative Bierman.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. Thanks for hearing the bills. House File 1683. The DE is really just taking the two proposals from last session that did not pass. The first would allow service providers to proactively report their estimated additional direct care staffing costs and capital improvement costs such that these costs can be included in their future rate. Providers would complete a reconciliation process to ensure the funds were used as planned. Currently, organizations have to somehow come up with their own funding to cover new investments in staffing or needed facility upgrades for up to 18 months until those costs are reflected in their reimbursement rates. And the second part of the amendment requires our state's Minnesota Care Program to cover all the room and board costs for residential mental health services for adults. Currently, when an organization provides residential mental health services to an adult with Minnesota Care coverage, the service provider is not reimbursed for the room and board costs, resulting in reimbursement that is far below the cost of providing care. And that would be the amendment, Mr. Chair.
Okay, very good. What we'll do is we'll go to testifiers right now, and then as soon as we've got quorum, then we will get everything into the proper motions moving forward. And for the first testifier, Ellie Skelton.
Thank you, Chair Fisher and members of the committee. My name is Ellie Skelton. I'm the Executive Director at Touchstone Mental Health. We work with adults with serious mental illness in the Twin Cities. I am here in strong support of House File 1683. It contains three changes to address some of our biggest barriers that organizations like Touchstone face. First, the bill proposes that our state's Minnesota Care Insurance program covers the room and board costs for adults accessing intensive residential treatment services, often referred to as IRTs. Medical assistance does cover this, and some commercial health plans cover these costs, but Minnesota Care does not. We are asking that there be a mechanism to pay for room and board costs for Minnesota Care recipients. Currently, it's extremely difficult if you're on Minnesota Care to get an IRTS placement, and many providers just aren't able to accept those clients because of costs of food and utilities. Secondly, the bill proposes that we report our expected staffing costs for the next year so we can get reimbursed accordingly. Right now, our reimbursement rates are looking back past 18 months. Especially some of the rural providers, they've had like a mental health professional opening for 6, 7, 8 months. And when they finally fill that role for those months that they weren't having those costs, that makes the rate go down sometimes for the next year, even though now they have that mental health professional they have to pay for the full year. So we want to be able to consider those costs and do the reconciliation as we talked about. Lastly, the bill also suggests the same idea for improving IRTS facilities across the state that are aging and need of facility upgrades. I meet with parents all the time that have adult children that have toured IRTS facilities where they say they walk in the door and they walk right out. I don't want to send a family member or myself, one of my kids, to an IRTS facility that I wouldn't spend the night at. And a lot of the facilities across the state are aging and they need some upgrades. It's really hard. There's a small depreciation amount that goes into our rate mechanism right now, but depreciation is over the length of the asset. And so it can be really hard if you need to upgrade your elevator or you really need to do drywall the whole bottom of a new IRTS facility to be able to come up with those costs ahead of time. And then we just get a small portion of that over depreciation. So we want to be able to investing in buildings to ensure that we have adequate facilities is an important way to value all individuals who need this level of care. And the nice thing about this fix, in the past, we used to do grants, one-time grants to say if you have an emergency need for your IRTS facility, and that just doesn't fix the problem systemically across the state, like building it into the rate mod would. So we wouldn't need to come back and say we need grants to improve the facilities of aging facilities. It could be a challenge to find the money for funding these improvements, especially since we have to wait to be included in our reimbursement rate. So this bill offers practical ways to tackle these challenges. Thank you for your time, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you so much for your testimony and taking the time to be here today. Next person I have on the list is Michelle Murray. If you'd like to come on up. Thank you for taking the time to be here today. Please have a seat at the testifier table. Please introduce yourself. Welcome to the committee and begin your testimony.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me here. I'm Dr. Michelle Murray, and I'm the president and CEO of Nexus Family Healing, and we do mental behavioral health, both inpatient foster care and residential. And I'm here in support of the bill HF 1683 as well. We are greatly committed to closing the gaps in the mental health system, which we have heard a lot of lately. As an organization that provides a full continuum of services from high-end residential down to the community-based services, we are acutely aware that there are a lot of gaps in our system, and we are trying to work tirelessly to fill those gaps and provide our community with needs. To fill those needs, including adequately funded services at all points, is extremely important. Providers such as us and others have been working with DHS for years to develop the psychiatric residential treatment facilities here, referred to as PRTFs, in the state of Minnesota to address the acute needs of youth and children and their families with the highest level of mental and behavioral health needs. When youth have complex, challenging problems that can't be dealt with in their home community or in outpatient services, this is when PRTFs step in to avoid higher levels of hospitalization and inpatient care. What's happening with these is youth can sit on the waiting list for months and months at a time before they can get that service. And when we have been one of the providers that has opened one of the PRTFs since the state brought that into fruition here among some other providers, and we just opened our facility in East Bethel this past November with the capacity to serve 40 children. And this was possible actually in part due to the work that has already been done here at the legislative level and with DHS to improve the rate setting process, because that was quite a process to get that. However, the work is not finished from our standpoint. I'm here on behalf of other providers in Minnesota that provide this service to support what the bill contains in 1683. The current system is based on a look back on providers' costs, which through a cost reporting system can help in some ways, but it does not factor in the reality of the escalating costs that have taken place since the look back of the rates. That system does not allow you to prospectively look at the rise in your capital costs and your staff costs and to give you a rate that actually meets that. It's always looking back a year or two and only pays you back versus forward. This bill will allow the prospective staffing costs as well as capital needs to be factored into the cost reporting system. Quality staff and therapeutic environments are extremely imperative in order for us to provide this level of service. Without staff, we can't provide the service at all. And we need to be able to pay people, and we have to actually meet our costs. In order to keep this vital part of our continuum for youth and with the highest needs intact, the rate setting process just must be completed to include this part. So I appreciate your support in this important measure. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Murray, for your testimony. Appreciate it. I will note that we do have quorum now. What I'd like to do is have somebody move the minutes for March 18th, 2024. Representative Curran, would you like to move those minutes?
So moved, Chair. Thank you.
Okay, Representative Curran moves the minutes from March 18, 2024. Any questions or changes? Hearing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say nay. Motion carries and minutes are approved. Now that we've got quorum, we can approve the bill we have in front of us. Since Representative Bierman is not on the committee, I move that House File 1683 be laid over for possible inclusion. And there's a DE3 amendment, so I'm going to move the DE3 author's amendment, which was already explained by Representative Bierman. Were there any questions? Hearing none, all in favor of approving the DE3 author's amendment for House File 1683, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say nay. Motion is approved and House File 1683 as amended is amended. We've had some discussion. We've already had testifiers. I open up to members. Members, any questions or comments? Representative Engen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Bierman. My one question is this now tilting towards a system where they're going to be looking for either a reimbursement or an audit that would need to be provided by DHS? Is that something that we're concerned about?
Representative Bierman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Engen. I wouldn't foresee an audit. I mean, this does have this process of the look-back period for covering costs for the entities that are operating the facilities. They have that look-back cost, which affects rate setting, and then there is a report that has to be filed for what their actual costs were. This sort of gets to the point of when that look-back cost is 12 months back, and then you are projecting what costs will be in the future. This will allow these entities to take that higher cost into the future and not be losing money from the get-go on many of their activities.
Representative Engen.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Welcome. Okay. Not seeing any other comments, Representative Bierman, would you like to make any closing comments?
Just thank you for hearing the bill. Hope that we can get this across the finish line. These two parts of 1683 that didn't make it last time, they would be impactful. And as we all know, we're dealing with issues around mental health continuum across the state. Keeping facilities open is priority, and appreciate all your work on the committee. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Representative Bierman. I renew my motion that House File 1683, as amended, be laid over. The bill is laid over. Our next bill that we have today is House File 4692 from Chair Knorr. If you'd like to please come down to the table and move your bill. And I'm allotting, we do have a large number of bills on the agenda today, so I'm hoping that we can wrap this one up by about between 25-2 and 22. All right, Chair Knorr, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to move House File 4692 to Human Services Finance.
Thank you, and I understand you have a A1 author's amendment. Would you like to explain your A1 author's amendment?
Mr. Chair, the A1 author's amendment is just a technical fix on a few items on the bill.
All right. Any discussion to the author's A1 amendment? Seeing none, all in favor of adopting the A1 author's amendment, House File 4692, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say nay. Motion is approved, and the A1 author's amendment is adopted. Back to the bill as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, as you all are aware of, we separated DCT from the Department of Human Services. It's great that we have now codified that section of the law. We have now the other pieces that are needed to accompany the changes that we made to DCT. I don't want to take much of the time. I'd like to invite my testifier to go over the changes in the bill.
Okay. Welcome to the committee. Thank you for being here. Please introduce yourself and begin your testimony.
Good afternoon, everybody. I'm Dan Starkamp, Operations Executive Director for Direct Care and Treatment and Incident Commander for the DCT creation. And thank you for the opportunity to present today and talk through the bill that's before you. Before I begin, as background, just so everybody understands, we did get special approval from the governor to actually share this language with stakeholders ahead of time, tribes, counties, unions, as well as other stakeholders like NAMI, and gave them an opportunity to provide feedback. We made several changes based on what they've recommended, not all the changes, but many of those. And as such, we were bringing forward a bill that has that type of input into the process. What I'm going to plan on doing is going through four sections that we kind of lumped things together here. And as Chair Knorr mentioned earlier, you've already passed the bill that moves things from one section to the DCT. What DCT needs now are some things added in order for us to be an agency. Specifically, government to government, the tribal information, data privacy, unclassified service, peer review protections, social welfare, which is our client's banking system, and then create special revenue funds for facility management, system account, gifts, grants, contributions, and cemetery maintenance. Cemetery maintenance. And this would be similar to what other state agencies already have. The second section really deals with the board and the board's membership, as well as the roles and responsibility. I think it was before the group before, where we talked about having five members in last year's language. I think it heard from this group, as well as many of our stakeholders, that five just is not enough. After hearing from all of our stakeholders, we came up with seven voting and two non-voting members. Let me start with the seven voting members. The first was ensuring that we had a doctor on the, either a psychiatrist or a physician that has behavioral health background in that process. Second position that we changed was having the Commissioner of Human Services on, just for the coordination between DHS and others, which others were asking how we're going to make sure that we're in alignment with. Then two members that have hospital or non-profit board backgrounds. Three members that have mental health administration, behavioral health, healthcare professions. We added traditional healers at the request of our tribes, as well as organized labor. This section only had two last time, so we actually added one more to this group as well, for a total of five. We also recognize that we've got a lot of input that needed from people that are integrally involved with DCT in our process, specifically the unions and the counties. And what we're recommending is having them on the board to get their valued perspective in the process, but not be voting members because of the conflict that it brings, just because of the daily activities that they work in and do for DCT. There is one voting member that will also be from Greater Minnesota at the request of our partners. And anybody that is a voting member cannot be a DCT employee, a county employee, a member of the legislature, or a member of the unions representing DCT. And we'd like a year separation for to avoid that any conflict. As far as the roles and responsibilities, remember, DCT is still a state agency. While we're reporting to a board, we're still bound by the same standards that MMB has, the governor has. We still got to come to this body for changes to statute or for budgets in that process. So that doesn't change. We're just reporting now to a board. This section basically describes things that I call logistics, the quorum, or who's going to be the chair, conflict of interest, indemnification of the board members, expedited rulemaking for the first 5 years so we can get some language changed there, and board delegation of authority to the CEO or others in that process, and that's kind of laid out in that section. The third grouping is really, I think what we talked about before, is that we'd like to move the date of actually being changing the authority from January 1 of 25 to July 1 of 25. This is to align with the biennial budget, as well as to align with our contracts with our unions beginning that July 1. But at the same time, we're actually now asking for the board to come on board before January 1 of 25. That allows the board, and we actually put in the statute, that they have to consult with the commissioner on any policy and budget moving forward to the board or to the legislature in that year. The third area is really the technical piece that we mentioned previously, where we're taking the board, making the DCT an agency and not a department in that process. Department reports to a commissioner, and as we report to a board, we thought the agency was better in that language in that process. So, Mr. Chair and members, that is the summary of the bill.
Thank you so much for the presentation. I also have next, we'll go on to Matt Freeman. If you'd like to come down, please. Welcome to the committee. Thanks for taking the time to be here. Please introduce yourself and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Chair, members of the committee. My name is Matt Freeman. I work on behalf of the Association of Minnesota Counties and the Minnesota Association of County Social Service Administrators. I want to thank Chair Knorr for working on this bill. We know that with the determination last session to separate DCT from DHS, that it's really important that we do this well. Counties are asking that through bills like this, that government partners like counties who work with both DHS and DCT, we have a unique perspective that needs to be considered and reflected in the governance board. Counties know that DCT is our state safety net to meet the needs of people with complex needs who are unable to be served in community. And DCT is an essential government partner to serve those who private providers cannot or will not serve. Currently, DCT's system remains underdeveloped to address the immediate needs of Minnesota residents, and DCT is not alone in this. There are significant gaps in availability of many levels of service across Minnesota's mental health system that need expansion. But today, Minnesota's safety net too often appears to be hospital emergency rooms, jails, and other inappropriate settings. We know that for Minnesota to prosper, we need DCT, counties, DHS's Behavioral Health Division to all work seamlessly together to support developing our needed behavioral health continuum of care. Last session, AMC and MAXA asked in developing the future DCT board that experience in delivery of behavioral health and care coordination be added to the applicable skills desired of board members. We appreciate that reflected. Knowledge and experience with our state's full behavioral health system, not just with healthcare administration, is critical to the new agency's success. And counties are uniquely qualified to provide that expertise. And as such, we ask for a voting seat on the future board for AMC. We hope that the additional transparency and accountability of this DCT Executive Committee Board will pave the way for better partnerships with DCT, both for counties and with DHS and its Behavioral Health Division. A voting member on the Executive Board brings essential perspective to leadership at DCT. We also would like to engage in further conversations about defining conflict of interest language. We don't seek to appoint members to the board who have a conflict of interest, but we question whether the one-year delay for county staff is appropriate, as we don't see that included for others who are serving on the board, including hospitals or nonprofit boards. Equally, this is in contrast to the DHS commissioner who is appointed in the current language as a voting member. We have county staff and county commissioners that currently serve on a number of state hospital boards and bring the experience from their day job to their work on those boards. Ultimately, we hope that a substantial investment in support of DCT can be paired with expansion of community mental health treatment and that counties can be at the table to help drive that investment. Thank you so much and happy to take questions.
Okay, very good. Is there anyone else that would like to testify before the committee? Not seeing any, we'll go to member questions. Representative Edelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative, for this bill. I think it's really important to continue to build out DCT and making sure that we have just an area to represent and address the complex mental health issues our state is facing. So I appreciate all of this. It's interesting that Mr. Freeman brought up the 1 year. I was wondering if the person tester at the director could come back and just tell me why the 1 year. I actually have a question about that as well. And how, just give me a little bit more process of why that was decided.
Welcome back, Mr. Starknet.
Storkamp.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, Representative Edelson, and members, the 1 year was really looking at the areas that we thought would have the biggest conflict of interest coming forward. And that, so that 1 year was really intended to give them that separation from where they were working previously to being on the board and representing the board as opposed to representing the department they're coming from.
Representative Edelson.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And then the counties, they do not have representation on the board. I guess I didn't see that.
Mr. Starkamp.
Mr. Chair, Representative Edelson, the board actually has a non-voting member from the counties and a non-voting member from the unions.
Representative Edelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's all.
Any other comments or questions? Not hearing any. Chair Noor, I invite you to make closing comments and to renew your motion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to renew my motion that House File 4692 as amended to be re-referred to Human Services Finance.
Thank you, Chair Noor. All those in favor of re-referring House File 4692 as amended to the Human Services Finance Committee signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say nay. Motion is approved and House File 4692 as amended is re-referred to the Human Services Finance Committee. Thank you, Chair Noor, for the bill. Next, we are at House File 4839, which is a Representative Ryer bill. If you'd like to come down, please. I'm hoping that we can keep moving along quickly today. I will thank you for being here. I will move, since you are not on the committee, I will move to refer House File 4839 to the Human Services Finance Committee. Would you like to present your bill, Representative Ryer?
Thank you, Chair Fisher. Hello, committee members. It's a pleasure to be here. I appreciate the opportunity to present House File 4839, which would implement the program of all-inclusive care for the elderly, or PACE, in Minnesota. PACE is an innovative program that provides comprehensive medical and social services to certain frail elderly people still living in the community. It gives them an option instead of moving into nursing home, accepting nursing home care. 32 other states plus Washington, D.C. have active PACE programs, and most of the participants who are in PACE are dually eligible for both Medicare and Medicaid. However, eligible persons also include those aged 55 to 65, an important disability equity consideration for people receiving CADI waiver services who could be served by PACE. Also, PACE has been successful in providing underserved communities with high quality, flexible, and culturally appropriate care in the person's home. With PACE, older adults have an interdisciplinary team of healthcare professionals working with them to make sure they successfully remain living in the community with the vital recreational, social, medical, mental health, nutritional, and spiritual services they need. Funding for a Minnesota PACE program rate was passed in the 2023 legislative session. The rate study report was completed earlier this month, and a final recommendation on the Minnesota program framework is due by September 1st of this year. House File 4839 takes the next step by establishing the framework for successful implementation of the PACE program in Minnesota. This bill lays out a proposed timeline for DHS to take the necessary steps to implement PACE. Under the bill as written, the commissioner would be required to submit a state plan amendment proposal for PACE implementation to the federal government by October 1st, 2024, based on the published actuarial rate study and the recommendations mentioned previously. By December 31st, 2024, or upon federal approval, the commissioner would establish a PACE organization application process for competitive bidding. By June 30th, 2025, or 6 months after the RFP is published, the commissioner would award PACE contracts and operations would begin. Finally, by January 1st, 2026, PACE organizations awarded contracts by DHS must begin delivering PACE services. And note, we're still talking about some of these details with DHS. Under this bill, the commissioner is required to use medical assistance appropriation to fund PACE services and to use actuarial methods to develop and pay capitation rates to organizations contracted to implement PACE. Further, the rate methodology must provide for all reasonable, appropriate, and attainable costs for each PACE organization within a region, and DHS would be responsible for certifying the eligibility for services of all PACE program participants under this bill. Chair Fisher, thank you for your consideration, and I'll look forward to questions.
You're welcome. Thank you, Representative Ryer. Are there any testifiers that would like to address the committee on this bill? Not seeing any. I'll go to members' comments or questions. Any members? Not seeing anything except several. No, okay, Chair Noor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think this is a good bill. Looking forward to see the implementation of the PACE program. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Okay.
Thank you. Representative Ryer, closing comments.
Thank you very much.
Very good. I like short and sing. Thank you. Thank you, Representative Ryer. I renew my motion that House File 4839 be re-referred to the Human Services Finance Committee. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved and House File 4839 is re-referred to the Human Services Finance Committee. Thank you, Representative Ryer. Next on the agenda, welcome to the committee. We have Chair Herr. Please come on down to the committee table. I see you're here already. Since you're not a member of the committee, I move to re-refer House File 4981 to the Health, Finance, and Policy Committee. Chair Herr, welcome to the committee, and please introduce your bill.
Thank you, Chair Fisher. And this is my first time in front of your committee, so I'm glad to be here. And the bill that we are hearing today is for House File 4981. It is to increase Medicaid rates for mental health services. And I know you have a lot of bills today, and I had some great things I wanted to share with all of you, but I'm going to cut those all out and just going to say I'm going to talk a little bit about just what the bill does. And I'm going to summarize everything a little bit, but this bill is streamlining and increasing the behavioral health home rates, aligning community-based outpatient rates to Medicare rates, increasing rates for Minnesota-specific services to reflect market-based costs, increasing rates for inpatient mental health services, offering a 10% bonus payment for service providers in health professional shortage areas, medically underserved areas, and medically underserved populations, and eliminating the current 20% cut for services provided by master-level educated providers. And so, you know, I This committee already knows the importance of increasing these mental health rates, and we are in a crisis, especially for individuals who are on public assistance programs, Medicaid programs, and that our kiddos are at the greatest risk and need. And so I really appreciate the opportunity to have this bill heard, and I do have testifiers here today, Chair Fisher, and I will just turn it over to them.
Thank you, Chair Herr. First, I have on the list Jessica Brisbois. Welcome to the committee. Thank you for taking the time to be here today. Please introduce yourself and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Fisher and committee members. My name is Jessica Brisbois, and I am the manager of acute mental health services at Children's Minnesota. I appreciate you having me here today to discuss the solutions needed to address the mental health needs of Minnesota kids. There is a lack of mental health services in our state, and children are waiting for months to access care, too often utilizing the emergency department as a last resort. In 2018, about 1,700 visits to Children's Minnesota emergency departments were for a mental health concern. In 2023, that number had climbed to 3,300. And last year, over 250 kids collectively spent more than 1,600 days stuck at Children's Minnesota because the appropriate treatment setting was not available to them. The parents and guardians of these children have often recognized their child's need for support and worked diligently to try and get them care, but have run into barriers accessing outpatient services, including long waitlists. While waiting, their child's mental health gets worse, and families find themselves desperately seeking a solution, which is what brings them to the emergency department. We do our best to stabilize these children while they are with us, but when they are discharged, they are often still on wait lists and won't have guaranteed access to support when they return home. This increases the risk of them returning to the emergency department in crisis again in the future. It could also increase the chances of them needing acute inpatient care. As a provider, I know if these kids had access to outpatient mental health services, many of these crises could be avoided. That is why increasing Medicaid rates is vital to addressing the current challenges facing children in our state. Nearly half of our patients receiving mental health services rely on Medicaid. Wait times for outpatient mental health care range from 2 months to 2 years, depending on what the child needs. Due to challenges with hiring staff and increasing demand for care, most of our outpatient services are only available to current Children's Minnesota patients. And even then, we do not have the capacity to provide care for every child who needs it. Currently, Medicaid rates for these services are paid well below the cost of providing care. Across all of our mental health services, we are reimbursed for less than half of our costs. And because costs continue to rise, that level of reimbursement is getting worse. This trend is the same for inpatient services we provide. The current rates are unsustainable, and on average, we operate these vital services at a loss, severely limiting our ability to recruit and retain the staff needed to meet the growing needs of our patients and their families. One of the biggest impacts we can have on the mental health crisis is investing in outpatient care. When you invest in outpatient care, it decreases the pressure on the rest of the system, including emergency departments, inpatient units, and other more acute services. And investing in inpatient care will ensure those services are there for children and family who need them. My colleagues and I are working tirelessly to support patients and families, and we need the legislature to support us by making these investments now. Thank you, Representative Herr, for your leadership on this bill, and thank you, committee members, for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Brisbois, for taking the time to be here today. Next, I have Trevor Johnson. If you would please come down. Welcome to the committee. Thanks for taking time to be here. Please introduce yourself and then begin your testimony.
Chair Fisher and members of the committee, I'm Trevor Johnson, a licensed independent clinical social worker and executive director of Tasks Unlimited. I was invited to testify today on behalf of mental health providers across the state, having been part of the recently presented DHS rate study provider work group. If Minnesota's community mental health system were a roadway through the wilderness, it would be one filled with potholes and never finished, turning into a convoluted maze of trails, dead ends, overlapping tracks, and broken bridges. Each new path or new funding stream has come with new rules, new requirements, and oversight, slowing progress and distracting from the original goal. The most worn paths lead to an emergency room or acute crisis service, which, due to a lack of community providers and extremely high caseloads, can send someone right back out into the wilderness. People are lost out there. People are getting sicker. People are dying. And it will only get worse without action on the foundational issue, Medicaid rates far below what it costs to provide the service. The mental health field is filled with people whose mission is to help others, who bring their ingenuity, ideas, skill, and compassion to all they do, and who repeatedly find that their efforts and energies are rarely enough to offset the impacts of a broken and decaying mental health system. This work can be rewarding, but it is increasingly disheartening, stressful, demoralizing, and at times traumatizing. With increased demand, higher acuity of needs for clients, and chronic low rates of pay, both long-term providers and those new to the field are leaving community mental health roles at rates that I've never seen in my 20 years in this field. Organizations and impactful services have been shut down more frequently, and many critical positions are sitting unfilled, some for 2 years or more. Along this mental health roadway, the mud keeps getting deeper, the complex maze of paths are overgrown, fewer people are available to help, and more people are in desperate need of support. The compounding effect of chronic underpayment and the need to chase one-time funding, special projects, and the unending churn of grants has left a decayed, overgrown, and crumbling system where an exponentially growing number of people will get lost in the wilderness this year unless you act. If you truly support mental health, you must support and prioritize these Medicaid rate adjustments. Immediate action is needed to prevent the system from breaking beyond repair, leading to deeper devastation for the people and communities of Minnesota. Thank you for supporting people with mental health needs and their families across this great state. I look forward to seeing you act on this so we can truly start building toward a system and community where people with mental illness can survive and thrive. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Are there any other testifiers who would like to address the committee? Not seeing any members. Questions? First one I have is Representative Backer.
Yes, I'm looking on Section 4, line 10.24. I don't know if Representative Hurd can answer who, but this is a new section. Thank you. Thank you, Representative Baker. This is a new section, payments for behavioral health home services. Can someone tell me how the $408 per member per month was calculated? How did that come about, please?
Thank you. It seems we have our phone a friend here. Thank you, Ms. Palin, for being here. If you please would introduce yourself and then begin your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Backer. Ginny Palin with the Minnesota Association of Community Mental Health Programs. And I believe to your question, Representative Backer, that figure was derived from the recently published DHS Medicaid rate study itself. The behavioral health home models was one of the service rates that was being studied and came to in those recommendations.
Okay. Representative Backer.
Then also, any idea, it says the commissioner must adjust the statewide reimbursement rate. I don't see that there's any parameters set or given to the commissioner. It sounds to me the commissioner can't do their own adjustment of the rates unless I overlook something.
Ms. Palin?
Thank you, Chair Fisher and Representative Backer. That language, I'm sorry, could you repeat the line?
We are, it's starting with 10.24. The commissioner must adjust the state rate reimbursement rate annually according to the change from the midpoint of the previous rate year to the midpoint of the rate. Oh, it does say a year for which the rate is being determined using the Center for Medicaid and Medicare Services. So, okay, it does. I just needed to read further. I answered my own
question. So you've got your question then answered.
Yeah, it just seems back. A little, though, okay. Confusing, but I'll have to do some research on it, okay?
And
it seems like if you go past go, you may not get the money, so no. I'm joking, of course.
Ms. Palin.
Mr. Chair and Representative Backer, that language is specific to an annual inflation adjuster, and so that allows the rate to be automatically inflated to keep up with inflation using the Medicare costs, Medicare Economic Index, or MEI.
Yeah. One final question.
Yes, go ahead, Representative Backer.
So in essence, if I'm hearing you correctly, if there was no increase in inflation, the rate would stay the same.
Thanks, Palin. Sure.
Mr. Chair, Representative Backer, I believe not. That inflator is put on as an automatic adjuster every year.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Representative Curran.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Ripper, for bringing this forward. I just wanted to note we've done a lot of work in this committee, including over the interim, visiting across the state and hearing about some of the various issues we have in when it comes to mental health services. This continues to be a work in progress. We have yet to truly get it right, and I won't even say that, you know, we ever will, but we certainly won't if we don't make the steps toward making changes and making things better. And what I've noticed throughout all of our work is there's a few key components to improving these services. One is the physical infrastructure and looking at how housing works and what sort of access people have. One of the other criteria or things that we look at are policy decisions that we do in this committee. How do we make those services easier to access for folks? And the other component that certainly can't be lost on us is rates. And we hear a lot of bills about increasing rates, and I don't think that's because just for the sake of asking. I think it's because the need is so great and we haven't met it for a very long time. It continues to be behind. So we hear a lot of bills about rates because it's so desperately needed to improve the overall care that we provide to people when it comes to mental health services. So I just wanted to point out that this is a collective effort. This bill is going to work right alongside with several other bills that are moving along the process to hopefully bring our system in a better direction, and I thank you for it.
Okay, thank you, Representative Curran. Then Representative Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Fisher. Chair Fisher, thank you. You know, Representative Curran, I think you said everything I was going to say. I think this is part of a larger issue we're having. I really appreciate your bringing this bill forward, Representative Herr, and I look forward to working with you and others to try to find the gap that is missing, that got missed last year. The reimbursements are real, and this area that I work a lot in, and a lot of you do too, needs to be stood up better, and we've got to keep our eye on the ball with mental health. Everything surrounding mental health and behavioral health, we all need to do a better job on that. So this bill does a lot of that. I just want to say thank you for that. Again, as this moves forward and we'll continue to work on it, we've got to fight for the money because a lot of it was spent in areas that we shouldn't be doing this, in areas that need to stay in healthcare, in mental health, and behavioral health. So I will continue to bang that drum as far as I can, but I am all in, Representative Herr, to help you with this bill and how to make it better. So thank you very, very much for this.
Thank you, Representative Baker. Going on to, as I trip this afternoon here, Chair Herr, any closing comments you'd like to make?
Yeah, just a little, just a few words here, and I just wanted to thank the committee for this hearing. I sort of breezed through my opening comments because I really want to make sure that you, I wanted to make sure you heard from the testifiers because it's really compelling what it is that we are facing. I think that as, you know, though I don't sit in this committee, I've invested quite a bit in trying to understand the landscape of what we're looking at, and I have visited hospitals that treat pediatric mental health issues or situations, ERs. I've done visited community health clinics. I actually did a ride-along in which one of the with EMS, in which one of the patients or one of the individuals that was serviced by EMS was actually the person was having a mental health crisis. And that I think about what it is that our community is struggling with, and knowing that there is a 40% gap between the cost of delivering care and reimbursement rates, this is something that we really do need to focus on. And so I appreciate and welcome all the help of those individuals who have offered. And I know, Representative Baker, you've been a great partner in this work. And so just wanted to thank the committee for this. And I would say that if we think about who we're servicing, it is the most vulnerable individuals, not only because of the way they're paying, but there are also people who are facing enormous challenges in other aspects of their lives. And so when you look at the intersection of all of that, we really do have to think about this particular segment of individuals. And so thank you for hearing this, and I look forward to working with everyone and getting this across the finish line.
You're welcome, and thank you for being here, Chair Herr. And with that, I renew my motion to re-refer House File 4981. To the Health, Finance, and Policy Committee. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say nay. Motion is approved, and House File 4981 is re-referred to the Health, Finance, and Policy Committee. The next bill on the agenda is mine, so I'll be turning things over to Vice Chair Frederick.
I see some items that are getting distributed, but Chair Fisher, would you like to move your bill?
Thank you, Vice Chair Frederick. I would like to move to lay over House File 4671 for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Thank you, Chair Fisher. Would you like to introduce your bill?
Yes, I would. Thank you, Vice Chair Frederick, committee, for the opportunity to present House File 4671. First of all, you'll notice you all have a nice color set of blocks that are out there. These are mental health building blocks. This is a symbolic stack that suggests a path forward. We have the essential elements to build a children's mental health system where we can intervene early, provide the right care at the right time in the right setting, and prevent the crisis-driven boarding of children in hospitals and detention. I will use the building blocks framework to walk through the bill. Sections 1, 5, 8, and 9 reflect the orange block. This is building effective service models, proposing investments in respite, and adding licensed respite providers, proposing a Medicaid benefit for children's residential crisis stabilization, and developing community-based group home care. Section 2 is the blue block. This preserves children's mental health treatment by establishing a youth care professional training academy to conduct initial training and onboarding so we can add staff and build capacity for children needing intensive care. Sections 3 and 6 propose to sustain effective interventions with mobile transition teams who move children from boarding to community-based care and the school-linked mental health grant funding to maintain current growth in funding and early intervention. Section 10 is the green block, which expands family-centered in-home services that are highly effective with treatment outcomes for children and families. Representative Herr actually presented the yellow block when she was presenting her bill. That increased access to mental health services by increasing rates. As we've heard clearly this session, investing in rates is functional, as without fixing our Medicaid outpatient rates, we will remain stuck in crisis with a lack of access to timely and quality care. This framework is conceptual and practical as we consider in this year and in future years how target investments can leverage effective service designs to build responsive continuum that children and family need to live their best lives. I propose that we take up amendments for consideration as part of the discussion, and then after that, we'll have testifiers.
All right. First up, we've got the A1 amendment. Representative Hicks.
Thank you, Chair. The A1 amendment is designed to ensure that all children can get the treatment that they need without undue financial harm to their families. As it currently stands, when a child, we got rid of TEFRA fees last year, which was awesome, but we left out these fees. And that has led a lot of families to have fees that are more than their mortgage and to have to decide whether or not to get the care their children desperately need to get better or to take out a second mortgage on their home. And we shouldn't be putting families in those positions. So this amendment works to repeal legislation that makes it very difficult for families to access appropriate services at the right time due to financial constraints. And I'm very excited to offer that amendment and hope for your consideration.
Thank you, Representative Hicks. Is there any discussion to the amendment? Chair Fisher.
Thank you, Vice Chair Frederick. I support the amendment.
Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
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 All opposed say nay. The amendment is adopted. We have an A2 amendment. Chair Knorr, would you like to introduce the amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move A2 amendment. The A2 amendment provides an appropriation for Children's Residential Treatment Program. This is part of the blue block that preserves the existing entities to continue to provide services. This will be necessary to support Children's Residential Treatment Program and also to be able to provide that services ongoing. They need that assistance for helping the children who are dealing with behavioral health.
Chair Fisher, your thoughts on the A2 amendment?
I would accept and welcome the A2 amendment.
Any discussion? Representative Ingen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Chair Fisher. The question that I have is, where's this going? I guess who are we going to be working alongside to develop this? I see that it's fairly broad, so I just want to make sure that we're crossing our T's and dotting our I's on that.
Chair Knorr?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do have Ms. Wang who can actually help and guide us in that instance if we need her to testify.
Phone a friend. You'd like to introduce yourself and answer the question.
Thank you, Representative Noor, Chair Fisher, and the committee. My name is Sufei Wong McCann, and I'm the Senior Vice President for Program Services at VOA Minnesota. We're a community agency that provides health, housing, and human services, but I'm speaking today to VOA's four children's residential mental health programs. VOA and the other 10 qualified residential treatment programs provide care to children who are in mental health crisis. They are kids who do not meet their criteria for hospitalization, but are also not able to live safely at home yet. We are an essential part of the mental health treatment continuum of care, supporting kids' ability to get the right level of care at the right time in the right setting, all with the goal of helping them to live safely in their homes and communities. But our programs are at risk. VOA has, in the past 5 years, spent over $5.5 million of reserves to cover the financial gap between what we receive in reimbursement and the operating cost of care. As a nonprofit organization, most of the people we serve are Medicaid eligible. So relying on private commercial rates to augment our revenue is not an option. Dramatic labor market changes and rising costs have been challenging for nonprofit providers. We simply cannot afford to continue to take on this financial burden. Not having residential treatment programs would mean that kids in crisis will have no choice but to continue to be sent to the ER. Families who are struggling to help their young people find mental health treatment would have an even less in-state options. A one-time investment in programs like ours would give providers stability to continue to serve kids now with quality, life-changing care. Immediate financial support extends the runway while we implement creative solutions to keep programs financially self-sustainable and also advocating for mental health reimbursement rates that cover operational costs. We remain in dialogue with our DHS partners about the possibility of identifying funding sources to maintain residential treatment options in the state, but we fear our time is running out. Thank you for your consideration of this amendment.
Representative Ingen, any follow-up? Any other Representative Hicks?
Thank you, Chair. The children who need services don't go away just because we aren't paying an appropriate rate in certain areas. They still get services. It's just where they get them. We know, and we have a report that dictates millions and millions and millions of dollars of property tax money is going out of state because the counties are sending children out of state because we do not have in-state facilities that meet their needs. They don't stop having needs. We just defer the cost of those needs to our property tax payers in our counties. That is what we're doing. And I think we just need to sort of say that out loud and acknowledge that the needs still exist, whether they're being boarded in a hospital at an exuberant rate that is also being paid by taxpayers, or they're being sent out of state and a county is paying an out of share, or a county is paying the cost of attendance and putting that back into property taxes. The care doesn't stop being needed just because we are funding it poorly. So we're going to pay for it one way or the other. The question is how, and on whose backs, and in what timeline, and will we do it fast enough to make sure that the children who are affected are able to live their best lives as adults? That is the question.
Thank you. Representative Baker.
Thank you. Thank you to the testifier for coming in. And again, I don't want to sound surprised, but I want to just hear a little bit more about VOA. Is it similar to the other model that I've heard about is Prairie Care? Is it somewhat the same level of care? I live in the community that has our CAB hospital, our state hospital for kids, and we are working hard with the department to make sure that we can bring that capacity up further and further, because like Representative Hicks said, this is a very critical need for us to help kids when they're at their youngest, to get them into a stable situation. But I if it's similar to that, and I'll get to the question, you can kind of run with it. A lot of your services are also with private pay. So is that accurate? If you're falling short of your services, how much of that in your portfolio kind of falls within that private pay mix of Medicare, Medicaid stuff? So I'd appreciate that. Thank you.
Thanks for the question, Representative.
Vice President McCann.
I can't speak exactly to Prairie Care's services, but we are a nonprofit, and so a lot, and it depends actually on the programs. We have four different programs, one of which is solely county-based funding, so it's all MA, and then others we actually, it's largely, I think, depending on the program, it's a large percentage. It's the majority of the kids that we take, and that's just the mission of the program, the organization that we are. We actually, that's who we want to serve, and that's who we serve, because they don't get served anywhere else. As Representative Hicks said, there, a lot of these families can't afford private pay. And so this is where they come to us, and we gladly try to support them in that way. So we have four different programs. It's varying, depends on the percentage breakdown, but primarily that's our mission.
Representative Baker?
Just to follow up, but thank you. Again, I'd like to catch up more offline.
Maybe
come to a visit sometime. I really need to see it and come and see that. So thank you very much for that. I look forward to following up. Thank you.
Any other discussion for the A2 amendment? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
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 All opposed say nay. The amendment is adopted. At this point, we will turn it over to testifiers that are here. First up is Leslie Yunker, and on deck is Michelle Murray. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Hi, good afternoon. I'm Leslie Yunker. I'm a children's mental health supervisor for over 25 years in Dakota County. Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Fisher, for giving me the opportunity to testify today on House File 4671. I am testifying today on behalf of the Minnesota Intercounty Association, the Association of Minnesota Counties, and the Minnesota Association of County Social Service Administrators and Dakota County. While this bill includes many crucial provisions to help children and youth, I'm specifically testifying today in support of two parts of the bill. One part is establishing a medical benefit for residential crisis stabilization for children and youth, and the other is collaborative intensive bridging services called CIBS. In 2022, legislation was passed that created a Children's Residential Facilities Crisis Stabilization Service External Provider Workgroup. Much of the work that is set out in House File 4671 has already been addressed in this workgroup. There are currently community providers who are committed to filling this need. Dakota County, like other counties in Minnesota, experiences too many children and youth boarding in hospital emergency departments. Honestly, one child boarding in a hospital emergency department is too many. Children and youth who are boarding do not receive adequate services to address their mental health and behavioral challenges. Their parents and guardians are desperately seeking services that will provide stabilization and safety for their youth and family. Residential crisis stabilization services for children and youth will provide a necessary and clinically appropriate response for these struggling children or youth and their families. This service will result in an individualized crisis response, culturally responsive care, and referrals to community service providers. This will lead to fewer children and youth going to emergency departments to receive their care. Since much of this work has already been completed, we suggest moving the proposed Department of Human Services report to the legislature from October 1st, 2025 to January 1st, 2025. This will allow the 2025 legislature to address this critical need. Collaborative Intensive Bridging Services, also known as CIBS, is a 6 to 9 month intensive treatment model providing clinical services to children or youth and their families. These clinical services are provided in the family's home 2 to 3 times a week and up to 4 to 6 hours per week. CIBS includes a 30 to 45 day stabilization placement in a qualified residential treatment program. This treatment model began in 2009 in Dakota County and has expanded in some areas across the state due to funding from the SAMHSA System of Care grant. CIBS outcome data confirms that treatment options provided in the community are cost effective, They prevent future costly out-of-home placements and hospitalizations, and they have the best overall outcomes for children or youth and their families. The SIBS model is part of the continuum of services that is outlined in your building blocks for children's mental health, and we appreciate that the appropriation section of the bill includes funding for SIBS services. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Up next is Michelle Murray. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. I'm Dr. Michelle Murray, and I'm the CEO of Nexus Family Healing. Thank you for having me here again, and thank you, Chair Frederick and committee, for hearing the testimony, and for Fisher for chairing the bill. And I want to talk about HF 4671 and the resolve that we can build the children's mental health continuum that kids and families need. As you heard already in the mental health rates bill testimony today, investment in mental health rates, which is the yellow building block there, is foundational and is at the top priority this year. As we continue this building block's proposal for our future continuum, I want to highlight two effective services that can make a profound impact that's much like the SIBS program and other community-based in-home services. First is the family-centered in-home models, which if you look at the green building block is what really is referring to in the testimony that you're hearing here currently today, includes a variety of interventions provided to families in their own homes and communities that achieve the goals that we want for all of our Minnesota families, that children actually stay in their own homes while they're receiving services, and that families get the services and support that they need when their youth are having challenges in the moment. Working side by side with parents in their homes is a powerful way to equip parents with the skills to meet their children's needs. Nothing goes further to help families avoid the need for more intensive services or to keep their children home after they have used other parts of the system. Another new model whose funding is called mobile transition teams has been incredibly effective also in supporting children who were boarding in hospitals to gain needed services to transition back to the community. As the boarding crisis continues, it is imperative that effective strategies are sustained to support children, families, and relieve pressure on our safety net services. Among the 50 youth and families that we have helped just in this last 6 to 8 months when we started one of these programs with this funding, here are two stories about this that I would like to share. Imagine the desperation of a mother whose daughter has made a life-threatening suicide attempt that led to hospitalization. When the immediate harm was done, or managed and cared for, she was then facing the reality of bringing her daughter back home with no other services except recommendations. Mobile transition teams went into the home with the mother and the daughter, building the skills that they both needed, providing therapy in the home, and giving intensive help connecting to the community resources that she would need for long-term stabilization. After 3 months, the family is thriving without the child returning to inpatient or more costly levels of care. Or picture the family whose son finished his treatment at a psychiatric residential treatment facility, but who didn't feel that they could bring him home due to the high intensity aggression and the needs and their worry that they couldn't maintain the gains that he had achieved. Through work with the mobile transition team before discharge, the family moved from a no to a we'll try it with the help of the mobile transition team, who was there every step of the way. In the home three to four times a week for 3 months with therapy, skills work, and advocacy, the youth was able to transition back to his previous school and family, and with the family is feeling they can care for their son now. Sustaining effective care, building what is needed, and helping our children and families gain the treatment they need to thrive, that is the charge put forward by this bill and is a mission to help us fully realize the services that Minnesotans need. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. At this point, we can turn it over to any other members of the public that are looking to testify. Not seeing any, we will turn it over to discussion to the committee, to the bill as amended. Easy enough. Chair Fisher, closing comments.
Thank you, committee, for the opportunity to present House File 4071. It's a very good bill. We're going to be incorporating parts of this in the bills that we'll be seeing over the next day. With that, I move that I renew my motion that House File 4671 as amended be laid over for possible inclusion.
The bill is laid over.
Our next item is a bill from Representative Vernig. Welcome to the committee again. Good to see you here. Because you're not on the committee, I will move the bill. I move to refer House File 4568 to the Human Services Finance Committee. Representative Vernig, would you like to introduce your bill?
Yes. Hello, Mr. Chair and committee members. It's nice to see you again today, 2 days in a row, so thank you very much. Before you today is House File 4568, a bill brought forth by Legal Aid. Consumer Directed Community Supports, or CDCS, allows participants eligible for traditional home and community-based waiver services, like developmental disability waiver or elderly waiver, to manage their own services and supports. CDCS participants receive a budget from the county and then spend that budget within the parameters of the program on things like special diets, modifications to the home, therapies, assistive technology, and direct support staffing. There are several issues that this bill seeks to address to make the CDCS program more transparent and usable for participants. The bill would require counties to provide an explanation of how CDCS budgets are calculated and remove the 30% disparity between traditional waiver services and CDCS budgets. It would also prohibit counties from adopting policies that are inconsistent with DHS policies. Currently, CDCS policies vary from county to county and at times within a county. So items and services that are approved in one county may not be allowed in another. This bill would allow for SMRT referrals from any hospital or clinic-based licensed independent clinical social worker in Minnesota, which should assist individuals in these settings with accessing waiver services. Finally, this bill clarifies that a CDCS budget may be used to promote community integration, that goods and services may be used by others, and that the rates for the home care services provided under CDCS may be authorized at higher rates than traditional PCA services if the participant has greater needs. We do know that the counties have some concerns, and we are very willing to work with them to address those issues. And in your packet, you'll find several letters of support, and I also have some testifiers here today.
Okay, thank you, Representative Vernig. First testifier I have on the list is Justin Smith. If you'd like to come forward, please. Thank you for taking the time to be here today. Please introduce yourself and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Justin Smith and I live in Roseville, Minnesota. I am here in support of House File 4568. I am in my mid-20s and moved into my own apartment 2 years ago. It took a long time to find a wheelchair-accessible apartment, and even longer to receive a housing voucher to make my apartment affordable. I now struggle with what I think is my biggest hurdle of all. How can I live the independent life I want, using CDCS? I have been using CDCS with a developmental disability waiver since I was about 3 years old, and it offers me the most self-directed option for services. This is what the Olmstead Plan is all about. Sounds great, right? No. Because my current budget doesn't cover the 24-hour awake care that I am assessed for, unless I pay people about $11 an hour. Can't do that. This means that my parents get to provide a lot of unpaid care. It also means that I have to spend a lot of weekends at my family home instead of my apartment. Not exactly what I had in mind for independent living. I would like to ask a question because I simply do not understand. Why does the budget not cover the basic level of staffing I need at the union negotiated pay rates? I live on my own and need staff to give me drinks, feed me, shower and dress me, and help me with all of my personal cares. They help me do the things I need and love to do in my community. Most of my budget goes to staffing, with a little bit to help cover expenses not covered by medical assistance, like assistive technology to use my computer. Time for some math. $25 an hour covers the enhanced rate for my employees, fees, and taxes. Multiply that by 24 hours a day, times 365 days a year. That's around $220,000 a year. My budget is 62% of that, or $137,000 a year. If I switch to more traditional provider services or a group home, the state will pay well over $300,000 a year. Funding CDCS budgets so they're a viable, equitable alternative for those of us who choose the self-directed option might sound like too much money. If I switch away from CDCS, like many adults with disabilities are forced to do, I will have less flexibility, fewer choices, and it will cost the state far more. I'm hoping that legislation will help fix this. Let's close the barriers to self-directed options. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Smith, for taking the time to be here and outline how important this is for you. We appreciate the opportunity to have you with us today. Next, I have Chris Erickson. Chris, would like to come forward, please. Thank you for taking the time to be here. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself and begin your testimony.
Mr. Chair and members, that was very moving. And just forgive me for 1 second if I just take a moment to take a breath.
Certainly.
Thank you. My name is Chris Erickson. I am here today to testify in support of House Bill 4568. I did not bring you any building blocks, as the disability world is filled with roadblocks that have yet to be moved. We are here for help. I brought my son over here. He's 12. His name is Bentley. I would bring him up here, but it's not accessible to get through that spot up here. Our family currently lives in Brainerd, where we raised Bentley. He's 12 now, he'll be 13 soon. He was born prematurely with multiple medical complexities and disabilities. I'm a registered nurse for 25 years, a mother of three. I'm educated, and I have privilege. I understand the law, the rules, the regulations, the state statutes, and that is not available to all recipients. I drove 2.5 hours today just to spend these moments with you. It was not easy. Our son has 35-plus diagnoses, his primary being Golden Heart Syndrome, which is rare. One chronic lung disease, hydrocephalus with a Chiari malformation, which means the pressure in his brain is so great that it's pushing his brain out the base of his skull, requiring surgical intervention and constant monitoring. I could continue to list his diagnoses, but they do not define Bentley. He is love, and he is loved. He loves the gorgeous nature of Minnesota. He is so smart, and he worships the work of MnDOT. We have thanked them personally just by how much he loves them. He's the happiest child I've ever seen. I have two others that are typical. He is far happier than them. Not for lack of mothering. He is kind and compassionate. He lights up a room wherever he goes. Bentley has community alternative care, or a CAC waiver, which means his health requires a hospital level of care in our home. As a nurse, I understand this. I used to be a director of nursing. This is what I do. I do it really well, I'd like to think. The CDCS option of the CAC waiver allowed us to support our son's individual needs to promote as much independence as possible, community and personal safety, learning needs, and community inclusion and equity, and support to our family so we can focus on caring for our son. We believe this option gave us the strongest foundation to build upon as he grows up so that he can live the one goal he has, to live a life of choice, where he chooses to live where he wants to live with the people he wants to live with, not in an institution. I've worked in institutions. They're understaffed, they're underfunded, they're under-resourced. Our son's favorite purchase through CDCS budget includes one-on-one adaptive swimming lessons so he could feel more comfortable enjoying Minnesota's gorgeous lakes safely. Due to a series of unfortunate life events, which included a lack of nursing care and access to safe public education, we chose to move to Ramsey County, from Ramsey County to Crow Wing County. This sudden change forced us to utilize the hardship waiver, which forced us back on the traditional side of the waiver, so that I could become my son's nurse and take over his care. We provide homeschooling as well, because it's the only safe options that we have, the only options that we have. In doing so, this ended the CDCS option and forced us to use the traditional side of the CAC waiver. This has resulted in a lose-lose scenario for our family. We have been waiting more than 18 months for basic goods and home modifications, such as a handrail, just so he can exit our home in the event that there is a fire. At this time, he cannot do that yet. The wheelchair that he has that actually fits him, we cannot load into our car because we don't have a ramp yet. We've been waiting 18 months. We don't have a handheld shower wand because we can't shower him safely yet. We have asked. There's a barrier there. We can't get through it. I have privilege. I have knowledge. I am not going away, and I still cannot access these things. I have asked for multiple meetings, and they have chosen not to meet with us, Crow Wing County, that is. There are many barriers to the CDCS option too, but between the automatic budget reductions, unnecessary bureaucratic and administration barriers, differences in how the option is implemented depending on where you live, and unduly restrictive policies around approvals for goods and services, many families are forced to choose the traditional waiver, which is not the best option for them. And what happens to those families who do not have the knowledge or privilege to advocate? They go unserved or underserved. MinChoice 2.0 has amplified these disparities. House File 4568 would help some of those barriers, address some of those barriers, and help make sure families like mine are able to utilize the CDCS option. This bill is imperative for the needs of the disability community to experience inclusion and equity. All children. In Minnesota with disabilities deserve access to the CDCS option to provide person-focused care to meet their individualized needs and goals. I heard Senator Hoffman state yesterday in another hearing, families want to be listened to, valued, and representative. In our family, we have not felt or experienced that yet. In our house, we say enough inchstones equal a milestone. It does take a while to get there. When working with the county and DHS, we fight for every morsel of care and services. We look forward to the day that enough morsels equal a bite. And maybe just one day, there will be enough to equal a sandwich. We ask for support of this bill. Our child's quality of life and access in his community depends upon it. Our license plate says yet, because we believe in the power of yet. We have not yet experienced inclusion and equality, and we are counting on all of you to mind that gap. After listening to the testimonies at Waiver Reimagine yesterday, it was clear that MinChoice 2.0 has an adverse impact on recipients. We implore you to stop this assessment immediately. Thank you for your time and consideration for the support of House File 4568.
Thank you, Mrs. Erickson, for taking the time to be here, telling us about your son and what he enjoys to do, and the challenges and hurdles that you face, and why we need this bill.
Thank you for listening. It means the world to us.
You're welcome. And I know it was a long drive. Thank you for making that effort.
My pleasure. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you. I understand we have another person who has a letter to read. Jean Martinez. Welcome to the committee, Jean. Thank you for taking the time to be here. If you would like to go ahead, introduce yourself and begin reading your letter there.
Sure. Chair Fisher, Chair Knorr, thank you for the opportunity to read a letter. My name is Jean Martinez. I am the Legislative Advocacy Coordinator for the ARC Minnesota. And I am reading a letter from Rebecca St. Martin. She is a user of services, real expert on CDCS, who coordinates a Facebook group around CDCS and helps people navigate the system. So I will just read her letter. My name is Rebecca St. Martin. I am a person with disabilities according to the ADA, a disabled person according to the Social Security Administration, and a vulnerable adult according to the Minnesota Vulnerable Adult Act, and a person with complex medical needs. I am a subject matter specialist on the current MnChoices assessment and CDCS budget methodology, and could also be on the next assessment and method with proper support. Waiver budgeting is discriminatory. The current MnChoice assessment and CDCS budget methodology do not reflect me as a person or meet my needs. They demonstrably exclude people needing hospital-level care, and I can prove it. By hospital-level care, I mean people who require a DD waiver, a CAC waiver, or a BIMB, neurobehavioral hospital-level waiver. The CDCS self-directed budget method is already discriminatory. The new budget method being created alongside Waiver Reimagine has many signs of being even more discriminatory. How I know? I have been fighting for access to a choice budget that supports me since 2019. It's what led me to beg the assessment questions, collect data, and seek support to understand the assessment and budget method. I am wasting away and suffering at risk in my home and bed with no access to in-clinic medical care, no access to home therapies, and living with doctor's orders that are inactionable. I have endured too many violent experiences from hospitals to be able to seek help there. I'm essentially a prisoner here and nearly missed my opportunity to tell you today, and actually she did miss, but I'm being asked to suffer and live at risk of death every day needlessly. I could be working and contributing to my community instead of suffering and trapped with few desirable choices. And I'm sure my peers in waiver services could as well. Please pass House File 4568 and fund state CDCS waiver budgets to adequately support the language in Section 4, which promises to better support us. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Martinez, for giving voice to Rebecca St. Martin so that we could hear what she deals with and why we need to have this bill passed forward. Is there anyone else who would like to testify before the committee today? Mr. Mark Hughes, if you'd like to come on. Well, got to kind of get you close enough to the microphone here so that they can record it. Thank you.
Today I can make it. Thank
you. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Hughes.
Committee, I'm Mark Hughes. Thank you for having me. I'll make this very brief. The people from Kerwin County's testimony was very moving today, as most were in here. And I just want to say I support the CDCS, anything to help them. Unfortunately, or by their choice, they moved to Kerwin County. We could do that in Ramsey County. However, I've heard a lot of the lengthy waits for waivers and so on and so forth, and there are. Mm-hmm. And I support the CDCS, just like I just said, but also I think we need to get the commissioner and ask the question, why is this such a lengthy process? Because this is one of many cases in the state of Minnesota. There are thousands and thousands of people with waiting for waivers, and you can only believe there's backup, log backup for so long. If that's the case, then we got to get the commissioner some help and get this situation with the waivers expedited. And I wish we could look into that. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hughes. Seeing no one else coming forward, I want to say thank you to all the testifiers for taking the time to be here today, providing the testimony and the with the challenges that they face. Members, any questions or comments? Representative Hicks.
Thank you so much, and thank you so much for this bill. I agree. We should treat people equally, regardless if they're doing self-direction or traditional. So I'm really excited about that. I did have a question about the SMRT piece and the any licensed social worker can submit a SMRT. And my question is kind of where is the department with that? Because we were going through a SMRT in term, and someone called me at like 7 o'clock at night and was asking follow-up questions about our application because they were putting in a ton of overtime. Since we passed TEFRA, they have seen a huge increase in referrals, and so the staff there have been just working a lot. And so I'm just wondering kind of where this sits with the department and what that would maybe mean for that team. It's a very small team, and I'm afraid that if we open up even more referrals, what that could mean for that team's capacity, and by default then, to other people's point, extending the wait to get through those approvals.
I see we have a phone a friend from the department here to take the question. Thank you for coming down. Please introduce yourself and answer the question for Representative Hicks.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Ann Bops with the Department of Human Services, and thank you, Representative Hicks, for the question. We continue to work with the advocates on this language and the language that's in Chair Norris' bill as well. We certainly have seen an increase in referrals over the past several months, and so we do have some capacity concerns, but we do want to work with everyone on creative solutions in order to ensure that people are getting their SMRT determinations as quickly as possible.
Representative Hicks.
Thank you. I really, really appreciate that answer. I think something we have to consider is both what capacity does for timelines, but also, you know, I'm hearing from folks in community that they're struggling to even figure out how to complete the process due to the, you know, that the application happens on MNsure and whether they use that application or the certain populations app and who they turn it into and how it gets done. And so I think that entire process probably needs to be looked at. And I really encourage those conversations to continue because I don't think it's really working for anybody involved at the moment.
Thank you, Representative Hicks. With that, I'll go to Representative Vernick for closing comments.
Thank you for your consideration of House File 4568. As you know, there is some work to be done in this area, and this bill does make positive changes to the CDCS services. It establishes consistent expectations and provides some clarity. I just appreciate your support, and I appreciate everybody who came out to testify. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Vernick. I will renew my motion to re-refer House File 4568. The Human Services Finance Committee. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed say nay. Motion is approved. House File 4568 is re-referred to the Human Services Finance Committee. I'll just remind the committee we do have okay to go to 245 today. We do have two bills left. The next bill I have is House File 4877, a Representative Clarity bill. If you'd like to come down to the table, please. Because Representative Clarity is not a member of our committee, I will move to re-refer House File 4877 to the Human Services Finance Committee. Welcome, Representative Clarity. Please introduce your bill.
Good
Good afternoon, Chair Fisher and committee. Are you saying that I have 45 minutes to talk?
No. We've got okay. 15 okay. minutes left for okay. two bills.
Just a clarification. So I'm introducing House File 4877. It's regarding positive support and analyst qualification. So the positive support analyst position must have one of the following competencies. And this was under the guidelines of the Brain Injury Community Access Disability Inclusion Community, Alternate Care Community, and Development of Disability Community. So they need to have one of the following areas. They need to have a degree in one of the relevant areas. They need to meet qualifications of mental health practitioner. They also need to be board certified. And in addition, they also have to have 4 years of supervised experience, as well as experience with a co-occurring mental disorder. In addition, the behavior specialist must have received around 40 hours of training and instruction prior to hire, prior to 90 days of hire, be determined by a current positive support professional to have training in the prerequisites and the skills required, and be under the direct supervision of a positive support professional. This would go into effect July 1st, 2024 upon federal approval. And I have a witness here too.
Okay, very good. Thank you, Representative Clarity. I understand we have Donna Cobb here with us today. Thank you for taking the time to come down and provide testimony. Please introduce yourself and begin your speech.
Hi, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I am Donna Cobb, and I am the Independent Service Manager at Affinity Care MN. I am honored to testify in favor of House File 4877, which addresses vital modifications of the qualifications of positive support analysts. Affinity Care MN is a home and community-based service provider that provides wraparound services in the metro area, such as residential care, supportive apartments, positive support, and homeless prevention services. What is positive support? Positive support is a 245D service, but also a framework designed to assist individuals with challenging behaviors in achieving a better quality of life. It's a comprehensive approach that focuses on addressing the person's needs, wants, and goals through evidence-based interventions and proactive strategies. Positive support aims to reduce challenging behaviors that may interfere with a person's quality of life or housing instability. Positive support can also be described as a wraparound service to fill in the gaps that other services do not address and can serve as a program utilized to reduce recurrent hospitalizations and lengths of stay. As a positive support team, we meet the clients where they are in their community, whether they're experiencing homelessness in their own home or live in a residential licensed setting. Examples of how positive support has helped clients is to reduce levels of restrictive practices, maintain housing through behavior modification, and assist individuals with self-harming tendencies to stay out in their own homes and out of inpatient units. Currently, there are three positive support positions: the professional, analyst, and specialist. This bill removes the qualification that an analyst has 4 years of experience conducting functional behavioral assessment. It simply reverts the qualifications prior to what they were in 2019. These qualifications have created a barrier to finding and hiring staff, which has resulted in long wait lists for individuals seeking the service, or providers are not offering the service entirely because they cannot find the staff that meet these qualifications. This is especially prevalent in rural communities in the greater Minnesota and in multicultural communities. Becoming a positive support analyst still requires a bachelor's degree, meeting training hours requirements, and supervision by a licensed professional. It's important to note that in practice, it's often the positive support professional, not even the analyst, who's conducting the functional behavioral assessments. Analysts can easily learn these assessment techniques through hands-on training and competency-based programs. The requirement of 4 years of experience in conducting and supervised functional assessments for an analyst is redundant and poses an unnecessary obstacles for both professionals and individuals seeking stability in their communities. Additionally, we support expanding the educational qualifications for analysts and specialists to encompass nursing, thereby increasing the pool of highly skilled candidates entering the workforce. Positive support intervention has the potential to prevent crisis and mitigate the risk of institutionalization, thereby reducing the burden on already strained mental health systems. By expanding the eligibility of those who qualify to work in this field, we can effectively address the growing demand for mental health support while promoting the well-being of individuals within the communities. It's essential that we recognize the value of positive support in safeguarding the dignity and rights of all individuals, particularly during these challenging times. Thank you for hearing my testimony and can remain available for any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Cobb, for being here today and for your testimony. Is there anyone else who'd like to address the committee? Not seeing anyone. Members, any comments or questions? Not seeing any. Representative Clarity, I invite you to make closing comments.
Thank you for hearing this bill. I believe that it's going to reduce some of the barriers looking at the shortage of the workforce. So thank you.
You're welcome, Representative Clarity. I will renew my motion to re-refer House File 4877 to the Human Services Finance Committee. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed saying nay. Motion is approved and House File 4877 is re-referred to the Human Services Finance Committee. We are to the final bill for today. It's House File 4675 from Chair Noor. Chair Noor, welcome to the committee. If you would like to move your bill, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move House File 4675 to be re-referred to Human Services Finance.
Thank you, Chair Noor. Would you like to go ahead and present your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll be brief with this bill. This bill directs the Commission of Human Services to prepare legislation for 2025 legislative session to expand reimbursement for overtime, overnight sleep services for PCA, CFSS support workers. It directs the commissioner to submit to CMS any necessary changes to applicable waivers or medical assistance state plan to implement these changes. Simply, this bill allows workers up to 8 hours of overtime per week per client for the programs such as CFSS and PCA. Mr. Chair and members, like every other program, that allows for 24-hour services, PCA does not allow for 24-hour services overnight sleep time. So,
okay, thank you, Chair Noor. Is there anyone who would like to trust the committee on House File 4675? Not seeing any members. Any comments or questions on House File 4675? Not hearing any. Chair Noor, any final closing comments?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to renew my motion that House File 4675 be re-referred to Human Services Finance.
Thank you, Chair Noor. All those in favor of re-referring House File 4675 to the Human Services Finance Committee signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved and House File 4675 is re-referred to the Human Services Finance Committee. Committee, our next hearing will be tomorrow, Wednesday, March 20th, where we'll be hearing three bills. Seeing there's no further business, we are adjourned.